Hello and welcome to another season of the Plebs on Footy podcast. I am your host, Rory O'Kane, and as always, I'm joined by Scott Fotheringham.
That is a disappointing performance from you, Banjo. Another season. This whole way through, you've been counting the seasons and the episodes, and now it's just another season. We're better than that, Banjo. This is a special season.
It is a very special season, but there's a reason I said another season. It's because I've lost count. I cannot physically remember how many years we've done this. We've been doing it for so bloody long.
I feel like we did four proper ones, didn't we?
That's about right. I don't know. Do we count last year? I don't think we do, but probably we kind of have to.
Yeah. No, we're a cat, Banjo. We're a cat. We have nine lives. We just keep returning. I have buried the Plebs on Footy podcast on at least three or four occasions.
You buried it before it even was born, so you've been burying it for a very long time.
So more than nine times. But anyway, we decided in order to salvage the podcast, last year we decided that we're going to do a season of a podcast maybe once every few weeks just to sort of keep our energy going. And we did. Did we do three? I think maybe four at best.
Yeah, something around those. Very few. But, you know, we had COVID lockdowns. We had good excuses, I feel.
Yeah, but Melbourne were winning premierships, so yeah. Shouldn't I have been up and about? But yeah, I didn't have time to think about podcasts.
On the flip side, North were winning Wooden Spoon, so that might have explained it a bit as well.
Might have explained also why I'd been pushing it very hard. But look, yeah, I 100% thought we were dead, but we are back, Banjo, and it's probably to you as the host of this podcast to explain why we're back.
Yeah, well, I think the best way to describe it would be to call it an act of God. We've been approached by a startup commentary company. Would you say that's the right way to describe them?
Yeah.
I think the good analogy is Twitch for sports commentary instead of video game streaming. But it's called Hijack TV. We're very excited to be a part of it. We've signed on with them. We're now semi-professional, I would say. And, we're not only going to be doing the podcast again, we're also going to be commentating a game a week. It is not something I ever thought I'd see happen, but here we are.
Can't say I know how we're going to go. We've had one rehearsal, which was passable. It was all right.
Something that needed to be kept in mind was that we were commentating a preseason game, so it was pretty hard to get sort of worked up about the stakes. There was a little bit of zoning out and saying, oh, yeah, what do you reckon will happen in the rest of the real season kind of chatter. And, you know, that might happen when we try a real game, but who knows? Maybe we'll be a bit more focused and actually care about the result.
Well, we're starting with Thursday night, aren't we? Have we agreed on that?
Yes, we have agreed on Thursday night. We've just got a few hash out the where, but we'll get there. That could be an off-air discussion, I reckon.
But, yeah, you know, a game we've always gone along to for many years, the Richmond-Carlton game. So I suspect we'll probably just see a repeat of every other year, which is the usual Carlton get excited for a quarter and a half and then end up getting beaten comfortably. But we'll be able to commentate that for everyone to hear this time.
To be fair, I'm a little more excited about Carlton this year and a fair bit less than Richmond, so I know it's probably going to be the same result, but I feel like the gap's closing a little bit.
We say it every year about Carlton and they have a admirable performance against Richmond and we say, yeah, see, they're going to be all right, and then they're not. So no, it's going to happen again.
I mean, once bitten, twice shy with Carlton. I think when they actually do something, then I'll believe it, but before then I'm going to be a skeptic.
But look, anyway, Hijack TV on the App Store and I don't know wherever else you can get apps. Click onto it and we'll be commentating live. So you'll be able to click through to the game and you'll be able to see that we'll be commentating and have a listen to us instead of BT, which I'm sure you'll be pretty happy about, all our listeners out there.
Yeah, so let's be honest. First reaction to this as a concept, I did think to myself, who's going to want to listen to us? But then I thought, who the hell wants to listen to BT? Maybe there is room for a little bit of market growth and a bit of market share, because I know I watch most games on mute nowadays.
Look, I still listen to it, but I tear my hair out. So I think I prefer to listen to me talk about the game, so I'm sure you all will as well.
I'm not surprised you like the sound of your own voice. I mean, we've been doing a podcast for 6 years.
Well, and look, we've got a new podcast layout as well, a new schedule for how we're going to be doing it.
Yeah, let's be honest, we've just gotten lazy. reviewing every single game and also doing three or four segments. That was too much. That was ridiculous. It meant we saw too much of each other. It just got overwhelming. It was a long 3-hour process. And it may have sounded like we put in absolutely no effort. And we kind of, that was the vibe we were going for because it's the easiest one to maintain. But surprisingly, we did do a little bit of work before and after podcast. So we're cutting that down, cutting down the length of the podcast. And we've just decided we're going to keep it short and sharp. So we're just going to bring in four segments. Each of us bring two things to the table, and hopefully they're a little bit funny and or engaging.
And we can judge ourselves at the end of it, and we can have a running tally as to who's better throughout the season.
Yeah, the only problem with that is I'm never going to vote for you in my entire life. And you vote for me, so I think it's just going to be a 50-50 split.
We'll get our only listener, Poochie, to give his review, and that'll be our record throughout the year.
Hopefully he's as corrupt as a boxing judge.
Well, look, let's get into it, Banjo. I'm excited. So let's get moving.
Yeah, so I'll kick us off, I think, given you've apparently brought no substance to the table. So I'll bring a proper football discussion. I've been thinking about the year so far, just going into it, trying to think about how I rank things. I'll probably do a mock ladder predictor type thing just before the season starts. But I'm really struggling because there are about five or six teams that I just have absolutely no idea how I think they're going to go. I'm pretty sure they're all some version of mediocre. But if you'd ask me who's sixth and who's 12th, I don't think I couldn't answer you with any sense of surety. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to float these teams out here, and we're going to have a little chat why we think we're a bit up or down on them, where we think they fit, and hopefully we can come to some sort of consensus so I'm not just staring into a sort of a jumbled puzzle. Let's put the pieces together a little bit.
Do you reckon, are there more mystery teams this year than previous years, or is this always a thing?
I think I'm pretty confident in three teams being good, maybe another half team being good, and then about four teams being shit. In between there, no idea.
That seems like a high proportion, yeah.
I know Melbourne's going to be good, and I know North Melbourne's going to be shit. Between that, there's a lot of fluidity, and I would like to, you know, iron that out a little bit.
We've started the year with a couple of points of agreement, so that's good.
Oh, my goodness. The Premier and the Wooden Spooner have pretty set expectations going into next year. I am shocked.
We find ways to disagree, Banjo. But who are your mystery teams? Who are we talking about?
So we'll start with one that I'm probably more sure about than others, let's be honest. I got to four and thought, you know what, let's make it an even five. So number five is Gold Coast. I just think there's a chance their midfield could be good enough to be about 10th.
Do you want me to give my opinion straight away, or are you going to explain why you think that? Or?
Well, let's be honest. Why I think that is because I absolutely pants Geelong in the midfield when we watched that preseason. But look at the teams. Tuk Miller is already a star. He's probably good. I don't think it's a flash in the pan, and I don't think it's a kind of good that doesn't produce winning football. Him being a midfield leader is a good thing for your football club. It's not empty calories. Matt Rowell and Noah Anderson are two unbelievably highly talented players. And if they break out, third-year breakout, we've heard it many times before, if they break out and deliver good, consistent football, it could be a very big indicator that they're about to leap. And plus, they've got Jared Witts back. On the flip side, they lost Ben King, and their forward line looks atrocious. But let's talk about the midfield.
Nah, I'm sorry, Banjo. We're straight into it. I disagree. I just can't picture it. This happens every year, Banjo. We get excited for a little bit that they're finally going to come off the ground a little bit, and then we roll around to about round 15, round 20, and once again, we're talking about the disaster of the Gold Coast Football Club. I cannot see it happening. Yes, what we noticed in that preseason game was they had a very clear top three midfielders, which were the three you mentioned, Miller, Rowell and Anderson. And they're all good footballers, or at least very talented footballers. And they did look like they were running through there, and they looked all right. But, God, they struggle for depth outside of that. As you say, their forward line is now going to be Marbior. I think he's fit, isn't he? He got a little bit injured in the game, but I think he's going to play. Wait, who's their other one?
Levi.
So That's not great, Banjo. I don't really want to build a forward line around that. And then who else do they – look, their back line's okay. They've got some decent players. Collins goes all right. Ballard I quite like.
I really like Will Powell. The thing about the forward line is if Lukosius is half as good as he was predicted to be coming into the league, that could cover the loss of Ben King quite well. And then we've also got a couple of mercurial small forwards that have both been taken in the top four picks of the draft in Ainsworth and Rankin that I know they're not players you can bank on, but there is a chance that they lift and provide a consistent output.
I can't see it with Rankin. I don't know. I just cannot see him becoming in a consistent good footballer. I've seen enough of those sort of players before, and I just cannot see the substance there. Ainsworth, yeah, look, I know we decided he was Robbie Gray Jr. the other day, but like, I don't know if I really believe he had a good preseason game, but he's just one of those players. I just can't figure out his position. I just can't figure out where he's going to belong in the long term. He's kind of a small that plays a bit like a tall.
Yeah, plus being a high half forward for your entire career is a very difficult place to be and be a star.
Yeah,
it's normally just the barren wasteland of role players, really. Look, on the whole, I tend to agree with you. I lean that way. But as I said, I wanted to get a fifth team in there. I love me some Gold Coast Suns. And I think there's a chance they're a little bit surprising this year. Could they be better than St. Kilda? Yeah, I could see it, to be honest.
Unlikely. Unlikely. All right. Is St Kilda on your list as well?
No, they're not, because I think I've said this to you before. I know St Kilda are going to be mediocre. Are they mediocre or shit mediocre? They're the two things I could see them being. Could they finish 14th? Yes. Could they finish 11th? Yes. Anything outside of that? I don't really see.
Could they be good?
They
mediocre?
Could just could be
8th or 9th? No.
I just don't see it.
Yeah.
I think the midfield is so shallow. Like, after Jack Steele, there's not a single midfielder I really want. They've already started getting hit by injuries with Billings and Clark and Caulfield all out. If they're good mediocre, it's because Max King has turned into one of the best players in the competition. Mm. As far as I can see it, that's the only path to being okay they have. And, you know, I've had long-held misgivings about the way they've built this list. They've tried to replicate the Jack Steele signing over and over and over again and get an A grader for sort of peanuts and B grade salary initially. And it's not a sustainable way to build a team, but they're not on my list. So let's not talk about them anymore. We're supposed to be short and sharp.
We've decided we're doing a short, sharp podcast, and we've already got caught on talking about whether a team is going to be mediocre or shit mediocre. Move on to your next one.
I mean, let's be honest, we are who we are, and bagging on St Kilda is an intrinsic part of our being. Number four, I have Essendon.
Okay, good one.
I'm a bit skeptical. Last year, they were all right, but let's be honest, they didn't have, like, they got in with 11 wins or 12 wins, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it might have been 12 wins, I think.
And we talked about, they had a lot of talk about their three number 10 draft picks as though they'd copied the Port model and that had boosted them to success. But Nick Cox was fine, but he was still playing like a kid. Same with Archie Perkins, and Zach Reed didn't play at all. The main reason they improved was because Stringer had a career year, Parrish had a career year, and their midfield got a lot more streamlined because it wasn't confused by guys like Dylan Scheel being in there. I think their midfield is muddled. They've got a lot of very similar players, and they need to figure out a way to accentuate the best ones and sort of sideline the players that aren't that good. Whether or not they can do that and build a winning team and find other roles, they're moving McGrath to half back, which makes me think it's a bit of a waste of a number one pick, to be honest, but might be the best thing for the team. They've got to find multiple ways to spread their talent around and not just overloaded in a midfield that is too ball hungry and too same, I guess.
Gee, for someone you said was a mystery team, you went pretty hard on them, saying that you think they're not going to be any good. I mean, look, the reason
they could still be good because they've got a lot of really good players.
That's the reason why they're a mystery, is because was it a career year from Parrish? Was it a career year from Stringer? Or were they breakout years? That's the question which we don't know. We probably haven't seen enough of it to be 100% convinced that that is going to be the case. Are they going to be able to make it work with Shield coming in? It didn't work in that last month or so of the season for them.
Parrott's dropped off massively when he came back.
Yeah, but we don't have enough of a sample size to be sure. So I understand where people come from when they get excited about Essendon, because a lot of those players, yes, they look like terrific footballers last year, but I haven't seen enough to be convinced that it's definitely going to happen again or it's definitely going to improve, which is what they need.
Yeah, because if there's no improvement, they're the same team. And even with career years from those guys again, or making them breakouts and not being career years, there's still a fair gap between them and the top four, and it's a fairly substantial gap. Yeah. They did look particularly close. Like, they weren't close to beating the Dogs, which, to be fair, they made a grand final. But there were four other teams that finished ahead of them, the Dogs on the ladder, and they wouldn't have beaten any of those either. So they weren't a contender by any means. They've got a long way to get there. And a lot of people are talking them as a surprise top four candidate, which is not something I can quite see. I could see them more easily missing the eight than making the top four.
Right. Okay. Well, that probably, outlines where you place them.
Yeah. But again, is that fifth or is that 10th? I don't know.
Very hard to say. All right. Number
three. We talked about them a little bit in the introduction. Carlton. Is it finally going to happen? Michael Voss, new coach. Chero's brought in. Sam Walsh is in, missing for the first part of the year. So that's a bit of a bummer for them. But they do have a lot of high-end talent. And if their role players step up to being anywhere decent, they could be a good side reasonably quickly.
Look, I know that I laughed at the start about how we always get excited about Carlton and then nothing happens with them, but I will confess that I am one of those people. The last few years, I've never been like, oh, they're going to be great. But every year I think I can see some signs. I can really imagine them coming on and being good. It's happened too many times now that I'm refusing to say that. I'm just going to be, I do not rate Carlton until they convince me otherwise. So I can see those signs. I understand it. It was preseason, but they were terrific against Melbourne. Their midfield was awesome.
They won clearances by about 23.
They flogged it. And there's reasons for it. Like, you look at it on paper and it looks like a pretty good midfield. So, and they've got some dangerous forwards as well. They've got some good forwards. So, look, I can imagine it happening, but I've also been able to imagine it happening for many years. So I'm going to say I reckon they are about 10th to 12th, and I'm going to say that until they show me otherwise.
Yeah. The thing is, the path to them being sort of 6 is sort of very easy to imagine. You get Harry McKay playing well, having another great year. You get Kerno back in some sort of form. Jack Martin feeding off them reasonably well. Then you have the midfield, Cripps having a resurgence. Sam Walsh continuing to develop. Chera injecting some class into there. And the back line built around Wietering. They have lost Liam Jones, but they've brought in Oscar McDonald, which I tried to keep a straight face for. But the back line built around Wietering is not the hardest back line in the world to sort of fill in the gaps with. He is a very good player. The pieces, the main building blocks are all there already. They just have to figure out the rest of it. I mean, Saad is a good player. Williams is a pretty decent player. If Doherty comes back, the names are right there. And it's just hard to tell if that's all media beat up or if they are actually good players sometimes.
Yeah. Did you mention Mitch McGovern then?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I mean,
he looked quite good moving back. And like, as you said to me earlier, what a surprise that a McGovern looks good in the back line. Why did we wait so long?
What a surprise any talented footballer looks all right in the back line. I mean, when they said they were putting him back, I was like, it's going to work. Of course it's going to work. It always works when you do that. When you have a talented forward who hasn't quite made it as a forward, it works every time. So, of course it does, and he'll probably be all right back there.
Yeah. Never delist a key forward until you've tried them in the back line. Rule number one of list building.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah, again, I could see them being a reasonably good team, maybe hosting a final in week one. I can't see them, and I could see them being ordinary again because the wheels fall off Carlton so easily. Anywhere in between, I've just got no idea about them. But number two, and I think this is one of the hottest teams of the preseason. They've been getting a lot of positive buzz, but I just don't know how high they can go. It's Freo again.
I'm always going to go high on Freo, mate. You know that.
I absolutely do. I'm assuming you're backing them to be about fifth. But it's just it's just hard to see. And you look at the young players on their list and you think, and you see the investment. There's been a lot of high draft picks recently. And part of that's been through losing talented players like Weller and Chera by getting really good reward for them. And part of that's been through poor results. And I guess they've had Liam Henry in the academy as well. But I'm just not sure this is the year they're ready to do it. And I'm worried there might be a little bit of St. Kilda on the last gasps of Rewalt and Montagna and those kind of guys, that they were allowed to, oh, they were able to hit the towards the bottom part of the eight, just miss finals with the talent of the older leaders, but it also stopped them quite getting enough talented kids through the door to be able to build a foundation after that. I don't know. I of these teams, I expect, I lean towards them being good more than the others, but I'm just not 100% in on them yet because I'm not sure the kids are ready.
I don't think you can say they're relying on older players and that they're not building up youth from underneath. I think that they're clearly been rebuilding and they've clearly got some good kids in there.
They are. But
they're older players. It's basically Fife, Mundy and Walters. Is there anyone else I'm missing there?
Not really, but that is three of their better players, and especially Fife. I'm not sure they've built the midfield depth yet. That might be what they do in the next couple of drafts, but
true.
It's Brayshaw Sarong. But who are the young kid midfielders after that? They've brought across our boy with Brody.
Yes.
But is he a A-grade midfielder?
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
No.
Question.
On evidence, no.
To be honest, I look at Brayshaw and I think you'd be great as the third best midfielder in an absolutely loaded midfield. I'm not entirely sure he's the leader of a midfield, sort of in your Dustin Martin, Christian Petrarca, Dangerfield or Bontempelli mold. He seems more death by a thousand cuts than those guys. And I don't know. I think they need their Fife replacement before I'm willing to think they've got the premiership core.
Yeah, the loss of Chera does make a difference there. And at least, you know, the eye test of looking at it on paper. I mean, when you say that it's Brayshaw, Sarong and Chera, you go, okay, that's a starting midfield. You don't have to build too much around that to be a really good midfield. When it's two, you start thinking, you need another one there. So I see where you're coming from, but I see the excitement. I think they're pretty well coached. I've been pretty impressed with Justin Longmuir. And they do seem to be developing at a pretty quick rate. So I'm on the higher end for Frio. Of course I am. I'm biased towards them than I am for some of those other teams that you've mentioned. But yes, I can understand what you're saying and that they're a bit of a mystery.
Yeah, and I think I lean the same way. And it does need to be pointed out, they've diversified their sort of draft pick investment. They've spent first round picks on Hayden Young and Heath Chapman and in defense and Jai Amos in the forward line. So they haven't just gone all in on midfield talent like my own club has done. So they do have a lot more healthy spread across the board, and it's just the price you pay, but I do think they'll want to make more midfield investment going forward. My number one team for this situation is Sydney. Right. I am just not sure. I think I should be sure. They were really good last year. They have a heap of really talented kids. Mills came through. Isaac Heaney looks like he's coming through from all, going to play inside midfield from all the preseason talk. They've still got Parker. Kennedy's still there to provide experience. They've still got Buddy, and then they've got kids underneath Buddy. They've looked like Errol Goulden, Nick Blakey, Braden Campbell. They've got plenty of young kids through there. But I don't know. I'm just not inspired, and it might just be bias.
Look, I'm not convinced as well. I feel like that does come from a place of not so much saying that I don't think Sydney are going to be good, but I've heard a lot of Sydney can win the flag. I've heard that quite a few times. And I think because I have a bit of a strong reaction to that, it makes me have a whole big reaction overall.
No, only Melbourne can win the flag.
Oh, but no, like, I mean, are they a flag team? I can't imagine that. I mean, look, Buddy's great, but how many games are they going to get out of Buddy? 15 at the absolute best?
Yeah, they got 17 from him last year, and that was an unbelievably lucky 17.
That would be a terrific effort if they get much out of him.
That felt like as many games as he played in the 3 years prior almost. He's been so injury prone recently, and he's still their best forward by a country mile. So, yeah, if he's healthy, maybe I can see the path, but you can't bank on that.
They need Heaney through the midfield. Like, I mean, if we're talking with Fremantle, we're saying you probably need those three players that you can really bank on to start a midfield. I mean, at the moment, there's, Mills, who's terrific. They'll have Parker in there. I think Kennedy's playing in the back line. Yeah. Oh, he's very good. He's very good. And then once you chuck Heaney in there, is a bit more of that, you know, talented, exciting sort of aspect to it all. You start going, oh, yeah, okay, I can start to see that. When he's playing forward, I'm not as convinced. I mean, who else runs through there? Warner, got a bit of talent. Florent got a bit of talent. They've got a lot of players who are quite exciting and have shown glimpses, but a lot of them I haven't seen enough to be, you know, convinced that they're going to be A-grade footballers.
Yeah,
on that before I'm convinced.
Yeah, a lot of those players are nice role players at this point where you're very happy with them in the right circumstance, but you don't quite think they're ready to step up and be a main player. And we'll have to wait and see whether or not that happens. I do think they'll probably make the eight because I don't think I like enough teams ahead of them. And they have so much youth that you think that should compensate for any buddy decline. But whether or not they can ascend, I don't know. If I'm honest, I'm seeing a bit of... I'm looking at Melbourne and Dogs and thinking you're going to have the run of the roost for a little bit here because I'm not exactly seeing a heap of teams that I think are ready to take that step into being a contender.
Yeah, I will be tipping Sydney in my eight for sure, but I'm not yet on there a premiership contender. I'm not there yet. I'll just quickly say before we move on to the segment, I thought Richmond might be in your mystery teams from a different sort of perspective. I find them a bit of a mystery. Are they going to bounce back and be a top four team again?
They are a little bit of a mystery, I'll admit it, but I think I'm just protecting myself in case they're just good again and I have to deal with that because, as you know, the 3-4 years where they've been the best team in the league have been quite traumatic for me and I think you. So I'm just going to – I'm trying to work on the assumption that they're going to be good again. So if they are good again, I have the satisfaction of being right, which, as you know, makes me feel very good inside. And if I'm wrong, I can be happy that I'm wrong because Richmond is shit. I just want to protect myself against – possible outcomes.
Okay, so you're going on that side of the perception. You're saying that you expect them to be good as opposed to you expect them to be where they were last year.
I definitely expect them to be a finals team this year. I'll be surprised if they're not a finals team. They did have a tremendously bad injury run.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's eighth or seventh or sixth, that's definitely a band of outcomes I could see happening, but it could also be third, and like they might have one more shot left in the tank. I don't really know. Really hoping not.
Now, Banjo, that was a very meaty segment.
That was a meaty segment.
It was quite intense. There was a lot that we went into. It was a little bit too intellectual for my liking. So I want to bring my segment to the table now, if that's okay.
Bring it,
Banjo. I'm getting a tattoo.
I'm getting a premiership tattoo.
It's probably the latest premiership tattoo in history to happen about 6 months after the season. Or maybe even more than 6 months.
The most sober premiership tattoo in history.
But doesn't that make it more special that it wasn't a drunken emotional decision at the time? And I've actually had time to think about it. And I've decided that it's close enough to my heart that I want to go ahead with it doing it.
Look, sure, if that's what you want to tell yourself, that's absolutely fine. I support you. I don't support what you're getting it of. I personally think we just spent a lot of time designing a new logo, which we can't unbelievably forgot to mention at the top of the show. And I think you should go for that because, one, your very lovely girlfriend has designed it, spent a lot of time and energy doing so. Two, it looks absolutely fantastic. I think it would be a shame to just leave it as a digital visage that goes on all our marketing materials, on our new Facebook page update, and all that kind of thing. I think you should memorialize it. This is now our business, Scott, and I think you should take it seriously. We are now invested in the Plebs on Footy podcast in a way we've never been before, and I really am disappointed that you're only getting a premiership tattoo and not also getting it. I'm going to get a premiership tattoo if and when North Melbourne win one. A lot of work in the if, but if and when I'll get one.
It's very obvious what I'm going to say back to that rant, Banjo. It's all right, I'll go get one. Would you like to get one as well? Are you going to get the logo tattooed on you?
See, if you got the logo tattooed on your ass, I'd get it tattooed on mine.
Would you actually?
I think so.
I'm not. Look, one tattoo's enough of a commitment for now. I'm not going down this path. But anyway, look, the reason why it's happening so late is it's something which my brother and I were umming and ahhing over a very long time. And then he was a bit of a dog, actually, and just went off and randomly did it on like a Saturday night and went and got his tattoo. And that's, I think it looks quite good. So I'm getting the same one.
Well, I want a copy of the design. Put on our Facebook page so everyone can see it.
I will, but on Lewis, I'm gonna have it in a different spot. But Lewis has got it on his rib, and it's quite small, and it's just a little trident. And then next to it has sort of vertically down the trident, it has a Q3 with an underline, and then it has 47/30/15 underneath it. Have I explained to you what this means before?
You have, but we haven't recorded a podcast since our listeners won, since Melbourne won the flag, so do it for their benefit.
Well, it is the greatest 32 seconds in football history, Banjo. It is Christian Petrarca dribbled from the boundary line, Tom Sparrow off a step from 50, and Clayton Oliver running in 40 out and kicking the goal to win us the grand final. There was 47 seconds left, 30 seconds left, and 15 seconds left in the third quarter when we finished the game. So the greatest, 32 seconds ever. I actually probably is right about up there. So it's going to be memorialized on both me and my brother's body. So I'm thinking mine's going to be quad, sort of towards about midway up the quad. The idea is that it mostly won't be visible, but I suppose if you're wearing some shorts, you might see it a little bit every now and then. So it's like just enough that people might ask the question every now and then, but I can definitely cover it up at work. So that's the plan, and I'm quite excited about it. All right.
Oh, as much as I hate to say it, I endorse this. This is a great decision.
Yeah, so exciting stuff. That was a much quicker segment than yours, Banjo. So what are you going with next?
Next, you asked me to do this, so if this is a long segment once again, this is your fault. We've decided the most fun thing about a new year of football is watching players break out. I don't think there's anything better than a cup right when they debut saying, I reckon this kid's going to be a Jet, and watching it come true or watching it not come true. So I thought I'd put my money where my mouth is on the line, name five players I think will break out. And I have made sure that only two of them are players I drafted in my fantasy team.
I'm shocked. I honestly thought all five would be. But are all five North Melbourne players?
Only one is a North Melbourne player.
Wow, I know which one it's going to be.
And absolutely. You absolutely do know which one it's going to be.
Yeah, we'll leave that for our listeners to figure out. Like, is it in order or are you just five?
Look, it's in order because I put the North player at the top. So let's say it's in order. Number five, Will Brody. Absolutely no surprise from you that I've gone with this. We love that man. We think he is an absolute superstar. And we think he's been held back by the Gold Coast. We are expecting Braden Fiorini last year type output. We think he's going to be absolutely a linchpin in the Freo midfield.
Some are calling him Jared Lyons 2.0, and that he's been kicked out by the Gold Coast and then he's going to become an absolute star at another team.
I would absolutely love that, and it would render everything we said about Fremantle 5 minutes ago completely moot.
Look, true. He is one of our boys, though. We're pretty big on Will Brody. I think he's going to be good. I'm even thinking of trying to have a Will Brody watch this year and to think of a song.
I think we can announce that. I think we can promise that. For the last few years, we've been able to come up with a song, and they've all been shit, so we don't have high expectations or anything.
Picking Bruce last year was the problem when he did. He was literally on the injury list the entire year.
I've drafted him in my fantasy team again. He's suspended for round one, so he's still not playing, but he's healthy this time.
He ain't going to play. He gets himself suspended. He'll be fit and going. But no, we're going to have a Brody segment. So I'm 100% on board with you with that one, Banjo.
And if anyone has any ideas for a song that rhymes with Brody or Will, I'm going to have to rhyme with Brody. Let us know because we've got some singing to do.
There might be one or two Wills in the AFL that we might get confused with.
Speaking of, my number four player, Will Day. From Hawthorn.
Okay. Is he going to be fit?
I don't know, and I think that's the big question with him. He has played 14 games in 2 years. He's injured to start the year again. But, God, when he plays, he looks good. He's about the only interesting player on Hawthorn's list at the moment. Maybe CJ as well, but he just looks so smooth, so damaging. I just love the way he moves. He's got a rake of a left foot. He's got fantastic agility to beat players and not get tackled. Yeah, really pains me to say it, but I think this Hawthorn player is good.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. It does annoy me a little bit, though, when you hear Hawthorn supporters and they're like, oh, we've got all these good kids. Oh, Will Day. And I'm like, yeah, he barely played. Like, I'm worried about injury. I've seen the good things as well, but I'm worried about his body. And I'm not – he's had more injuries recently, hasn't he? Is he fit at the moment?
No, I think he's got an ankle injury. He's missing round one.
Yeah, okay, but – No, not good sign. That's the one thing, injuries.
100% agree with you. And the other thing, when Hawthorn players talk about all their young stars and everything, they talk about Will Day, and then the next person after that, I'm just completely bored by, and I don't think there's any chance of being a star in the competition. It's such a narrow band of players I actually rate for them, but that's a different point.
Ranger Barras, is that the second one that you're referring to, or is that just a general?
He's not established enough for me to consider him much of any.
Thorne said he's going to be the best player of that draft class, though. When he's played.
You know why he said that? To piss off Adelaide fans about Phil Thorpe.
Mm.
That is so transparent. That's good work from Kane.
Probably. All right. Who have you got?
Number three, we're going back to Freo, who I did spend way too long ragging on, given I've got two of them as breakout players. But Caleb's wrong. I think he hasn't quite yet broken out. He was good last year, but I think this is the year he becomes a midfielder who is a justifiably second-best midfielder on a decent team. He's not going to be a kid anymore. Well, he will be. It's his third year, but I think he's going to make the step up.
I was going to say, it is his third year. Yep. That's usually meant to be the breakout, or at least for midfielders, is what they talk about, that the third year is going to be the one. Okay. Yeah, I don't have too much to add on that one. I really like Sarong. I really like Freo, so I'm absolutely all about him. And, I agree. He's going to be trippy.
That one's just pretty obvious. I think every man and their dog thinks he's going to break out this year. Yep. And honestly, I'm sticking with that theme for number two. We're at the pointy end. Zach Butters. Look, he was All-Australian squad of 40 2 years ago. Last year, I think, would have been the year that he completely broke out and set himself up as a young midfielder, top-line young midfielder, but he got injured all the time. He barely played, and when he was playing after about round three, he was playing injured. But this year, he's been promised more midfield time. Ken Hinckley does not lie like most other coaches do when he's talking about stuff like that.
That's true.
And I think he looked fantastic in the preseason. And I know you shouldn't read too much into preseason, but I think he kind of can when you look at individual players. Mm-hmm. And he got 30 touches in both games and was fantastic because we know his ball use is great. We know he's hard at it. It's just about being that center of attention, getting the ball enough. And he's done it in the preseason, and I think he's going to do it in the regular season.
Yeah, it does seem real with him. I mean, there's one thing to show the glimpses of being able to play in the midfield last year, and then it's another thing to have all of the hype talked about you over preseason that you're training well, you're going to be playing more in the midfield. And then when it gets backed up again by their actual performance in preseason, they're doing everything which Hinckley and everyone else has been saying that he's going to do. It does seem real from him. So, yeah, I'm with you on Butters as well.
And to be honest, I think we have more recent stories of that coming off than we have of that disappointing. Like Petrarca, everyone saw that coming from a mile away because we had that exact same sort of timeline talked up as having his breakout year. And then he played well in the preseason. And then all of a sudden, he was one of the 10 best players in the competition. Yeah. It was as predictable as anything because we just saw it happen in the exact way it should happen. And we've seen it with Butters, and we're starting to see it more regularly, and it keeps coming off.
Good, my number one,
and you're not going to like this, Scott, because I talk about him too much. And luckily for the listeners, we didn't record many times last year because I would have been sick of him already. It's Taron bloody Thomas.
Mind blown, Banjo.
Superstar in the making. I've said it to you before. I think he's going to be the best player in the competition. He has absolutely every weapon you want. He is a beautiful kick. He kicks goals. He can take hangers. He can take normal contested marks. He's clean below his knees. He's quick. He's got breakaway speed, and he's got one of the better steps in the game. All he needs is a little more strength and a little more consistency, but God, he's got every tool you'd want.
Look, I'm actually pleased that you brought him up for this podcast, because it's about time that some of your ridiculous calls are actually on recording when you talk about him. Can you please explain to our listeners your two comparisons that you put forward for what Tarryn Thomas will or may or no, it was
no.
The minimum what he will be.
Yes, exactly. At the minimum, I would be disappointed with these careers. I would be disappointed with Sean Burgoyne's level of play when you remove the longevity as like his main factor, because Sean Burgoyne was about the eighth best player in a lot of pretty good teams, but he was never competition-wide superstar or anything. I would be disappointed if Tarryn Thomas produced at that level for 10 years. At the same point, I think, now this one is admittedly a little more wild. Adam Goods. Adam Goods, when you remove his two Brownlow years, was a fantastic player. But the two Brownlow years are what makes him the legend of the game. If Tarryn Thomas was just Adam Goods without the Brownlow years, I'd be a little disappointed.
It's just so convoluted. Like I don't know what Sean Burgoyne is without the longevity. That is Sean Burgoyne. I don't know what Adam Goods is without his two Brownlow years. That is him. And the thing that makes it even worse is when I give you shit about that, you go, just to make it clear, that is a minimum. He probably will be as good as Goods, but I just want to take out his two Brownlow years. Oh, killing me, Becker.
I stand by it. This is how we're going to win a flag.
You've given me an outstanding little segue into my segment, Banjo, because we're now moving on to the Kane Corns Big Call of the Week, which has been a personal favourite of mine for many years. Not number one, but it's been number two segment for us. Am I going to explain the segment, or is that your thing to do?
Look, you've brought it to the table this week, so you can explain the segment. But I would like to point out that's the closest you've ever come to giving me credit for anything, Scott, saying my segment is your favourite.
Second.
I am tickled pink. Yeah, I'm just gonna ignore when you misspoke.
I meant to say one of, but anyway, the reason why I enjoy it so much is it's a very big part of our podcast and a very big part of our friendship is criticizing the media and having some sort of commentary on the media. So this segment, inspired by the great man Kane Corns, who we absolutely love for what he brings to the table, and that he just brings along big calls and tries to blow stuff out of proportion to try to make a headline and to roll people up, and just enjoys doing it. So what we do for this segment is that we criticize, or at least we look at a big call which has been made in the media, something as Kane Corns-ish as possible. We take that to task, and then we give our own big calls, which we want to go ahead with, and to see what the other one thinks of them. So for this week, Banjo, we've gone back to, look, it's not to Kane Corns, but it's his new sparring partner, and he's a classic. He enters the Kane Corns Big Call of the Week quite often. It's David King. He very much belongs in this segment, and he has been the king along a long line of people who have absolutely gone ridiculously over the top talking about your mate Horne Francis. And what David King happened to say about it on this occasion was he says that Horne Francis is North's best player since Wayne Carey. He has not played a singular game, Banjo.
Yep.
He looked good in the preseason, but he didn't star. He wasn't best off.
He had 17 touches and 2 goals too. He was certainly not bad. But let's be honest, the club is bringing it along slowly, and if you're getting 17 touches and 4 scoring shots with a handbrake on, I'm pretty impressed.
I'm not saying you should be disappointed with it. I'm saying North's best player since Wayne Carey before he's played a game is a bit ridiculous.
Pretty incredible that he's already North's best player to play since Wayne Carey, when we've got the future best player in the competition in Tarryn Thomas right alongside him.
It's ridiculous, Banjo. I saw another article not that long ago in which they're, you know, doing like a season preview, and they come to the table that's saying that North have picked up the best number one pick ever. How the hell can you possibly say that about a player who has not played a game, Ben? But I just want to make it clear.
He is as good as Nick Riewoldt. I think I'll die of happiness.
This is just a couple of examples is the most important thing about it. It's just like people are just piling it. And this is what the game becomes.
Yeah.
People just trying to outmatch the biggest call about him so they can be the one that gets talked about and they make the headline. And I do think that King won out on it with his call.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He has been trying to mark this territory. He does not want anybody else in the media to be higher on Jason Horne-Francis than he is. So when Jason Horne-Francis inevitably is awesome, like, it's what a shock. You think the number one draft pick is going to be great. But so when he comes out that he's awesome, he can just be happy about it. Which, look, as a North fan, I understand. But you've missed a key one. You've missed an absolute key. And my personal favorite, Dermot Brereton on the Fox Footy podcast was asked by, I think it was Max Lawton, just they were doing burning questions for each team. And so he asked Dermot Brereton, would Jason Horne-Francis finish in the top three of North Melbourne's best and fairest? And Dermot started with a very, very down-to-earth, very coherent take about, well, we put too much pressure on I think that's a point for him. Is that something we need to acknowledge when he does it? Well, maybe more Robbo, I guess. But he made the point that we put too much pressure on draftees immediately. And the one downside he sees in the draft is that it sort of gives the kids too big a head coming into the club. And he told this story about Mitch Thorpe in the rooms after a game in about 2006. He hadn't yet played a game. It was very early in the season. He'd never met Dermot Brereton in his entire life. And he goes up to him after the game. Hawthorn have had a good win, so they're all happy. And he sticks out his hand and goes, "G'day, Dermy. That was a good win, wasn't it? Yada, yada, yada." And Dermot apparently did not like that at all. He thought that was ridiculous. He should show some humility for a guy who left the club about 25 years ago, 15 years ago or something, as though he's still the big man on campus, which I'm sure Dermot always thinks he's the big man on campus. But that's not
surprising. Did he want Dermot or Mr. Brereton was he going for?
I don't know what he wanted. Maybe he just had to wait in the corner until Dermy deigned him with his own presence. It was just an incredible story. And he was use it as part of this long rant about why he didn't think like questions like this, saying that kids would be too good too quickly, and he just thought it put too much pressure on them, and it was incredible. And then he moves on, and so the host of the podcast says, "Okay, so we're not really answering that question. Let's move on to the next team." And then goes, "Hold up, hold up, hold up! You didn't let me finish." He's absolutely going to finish in the top three of their best and fairest. This kid is fantastic. And just does an entire drive completely contradicting what he'd said before.
I think that grinds my gears more than anything is the people who try to act as if they're above it. And they're like, "Oh, these idiots in the media who try to say all these big calls." And then they just turn around and do the exact same thing. That's something which always grinds me. And look, Dermot is easy. He grinds a bit on many occasions.
I unashamedly love Dermot.
That is a classic. But look, do you want to go first on what's your big call of the week, Banjo? Do you have something you want to bring to the table?
Let's move on. Look, I am not sure this is a big call anymore because their offseason has been such a disaster. I think Chris is going to win the spoon.
Ooh. It's hard to go that far, I reckon. North Melbourne do exist.
Oh, thank you, Scott. So do Hawthorn. Let me have some hope. Everything that could possibly go wrong has gone wrong. Like the one bit of good news they have when Jack Darling finally takes his finger out of his ass and gets vaccinated, he breaks his foot as soon as he gets back to the club. Like, Jim Kelly's got COVID. Whether or not he's got any long-term effects could completely hamper them further. Sheed's out for half the year. They brought in a couple of mature-age recruits to bolster their midfield, like Greg Clark, who was just supposed to offer them something, and he's out for the half the year as well.
Yoke's out.
Chesser as well, their number one pick. Like, they don't have anyone healthy. I think that's why they have 25 or 6 players healthy for the first game. Like, the round one might get called off because of an injury crisis. I've never seen this in my life.
And look, it's not like even before all of this happened, it was not impossible to conceive that, like, you know, Kennedy will be too old and will drop off, and McGovern Yo won't get back because he's had so many injuries. Shuey's injury prone. Like, it was still possible to see all these sort of disasters happening, but it has been absolutely compounded. I would be tipping them for bottom four quite confidently. Spoon feels maybe a stretch too long, but look, that is the point of the segment.
Acorns.
Yeah, so look, I'm happy with it. You've done well with that
one. If you agreed with me, I wouldn't have done my job.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, look, Banjo, I've got a beauty here because I'm flying high. You know what sort of form which I'm in with my Kane Corns calls. Remember this time last year, Banjo, our big call for the season, I went with David Teague is going to get sacked. And at the time, it seemed a bit ridiculous, and I absolutely nailed it. So I'm keeping my form running, Banjo, and I'm going with, by the end of this season, all of the caretakers will be gone. The three caretakers of that year, Shaw lasted a year. Teague was gone after, was it 2 years or three?
Did he
two. Two years. It'll be a third year.
Yeah.
Get a hat trick and Ratten will be out of there by the end of the year. St Kilda, mate, they're no good, even though I was trying to say that they might be mediocre. They have high expectations with the sort of recruiting they've been doing. They expect to be a premiership team, probably more than that. Sorry, a finals team, probably more than that, potentially pushing up towards a flag. That's the way that they've built themselves. So if they don't play finals or even a little bit worse than that, the panic stations are going to start coming. And I'm telling you, the caretakers, I knew it would never work and it's not going to. They'll all be gone by season's end.
If that happens, he is absolutely not the reason that they haven't lived up to expectations. I would feel so sorry for him. He was shafted by Carlton. If he gets sacked by St Kilda after they've completely bungled their list by just chasing too many players from other clubs that aren't that good. I would hire him. And I think he's a good coach too. And I can 100% see this happening.
I agree with you, but it's just how it works. When they don't live up to expectations, they think we need to rebuild, we need to change, and the first thing you do is you sack the coach and you sweep the whole footy department out and you start again. And I'm telling you, it's going to happen with St Kilda by the end of the year.
Look, I can see it happening. I just really would feel bad for Brett Ratten.
I like Brett Ratten. I think he's a very good coach, but I don't think he's going to last. All right, I'm not. This is not a criticism of him personally. It's a criticism of the St Kilda Football Club and footballing cultures in general and how they like to sack coaches. And he'll be gone.
Fair enough. I think that just about wraps us up. We said it was going to be short and sweet. We lied. So we'll get out of everybody's hair. Hijack TV. If you don't, think commentators are ridiculous and piss you off like we do in Kane Corns, listen to us on Hijack TV. We'll be Carlton and Richmond Thursday night. I don't know what time it starts, but as soon as it starts, we'll be there. We'll be on the commentary call.
And thanks, look forward to seeing our logo.
Yeah, true. That'll be posted probably tonight.
Big year.
Beautiful. Thank you.